And I'm going to explain you a little bit about Curento and Nubo Media, which are somehow two software projects that I think that can be of interest for you. And in principle, for understanding a little bit about Curento and about Nubo Media, you need to somehow understand what are the objectives of technology in relation to communication. So when you think about communications and communication technologies, basically communication technologies are used today for somehow making distance to disappear. In other words, communication technologies are used for transporting media. Probably most of the presentations you have seen today and most of the technologies you have been working with in relation to real-time communications are basically very good in transporting media, in taking media from one place and putting it into another place. Somehow the evolution of technology in the last few years is also related to this. If you think about communication networks, basically they are just increasing the capability of transporting media. So 20 years ago we were able to transport audio, and today we are able to transport with 4G and 5G technologies, we are able to transport very high bandwidth content, even stereo video with high quality, etc. And in this context, I would like to start introducing some, let's say, concepts in relation to our vision in Curento. Because Curento, as I told you before, is an open source software research project, where the vision is basically to evolve what technology is capable of doing, in a sense that current state-of-the-art technologies in real-time communications are very good for transporting, and as we were saying. But our idea is that in addition to transporting, technologies should be able to do additional things with the media. Then I was explaining that somehow the vision behind the Curento software project is on providing more than just communications. Okay. For this, behind Curento there are a lot of different technologies, including WebRTC technologies, GStreamer, OpenCV, Node.js, Spring, Java. And basically we have put it, all this together for somehow being able to introduce this vision of providing modern transport to the WebRTC world. And if you think about it, in WebRTC technologies, there have been a lot of evolutions in the last few years at the client side, so that somehow when you want to develop the client part of real-time communications application, right now, thank you to WebRTC, everything is much more simple. 10 years ago, it was extremely complex to create client-side applications for making real-time communications, and WebRTC is simplifying this. But somehow, the next step is ready to be taken, and this evolution on simplicity, on the establishment of APIs, needs also to happen at the server side of the problem, so that for creating rich WebRTC applications, you can not only, let's say, use client-side technologies, but you also need server-side technologies when you want somehow to make things beyond just making P2P calls. So basically this evolution is taking place through the introduction of media servers. I think that all of you already know what is a media server, and today you have had several presentations of different types of media servers. But basically, a media server is something which is in the middle of the communication and is capable of doing things with the media, so that instead of just putting in contact to different clients, you put something in the middle, and that thing which is in the middle can do additional things with the media. And in general, most media servers out there provide three types of capabilities, which are related to transport. These capabilities are basically related to transport, meaning that they provide the ability of taking media from one place and putting the media into another place. And these capabilities are basically transcoding, grid communication through MCU and SFU models, and archiving for recording and for recovering media from pre-recorded files. Okay. So if you look out there, most media servers are somehow under one of these three categories, or even there are media servers covering two or three of these categories. So our vision in Curento is somehow to go beyond this and to make possible for media servers to do more than transport, as I said before, so that instead of having infrastructures that are just capable of transcoding and of making good communications and of recording and recovering files, why can't we think about providing more complex processing of the media, more complex analysis of the media, so that we can introduce things such as augmented reality, or such as computer vision, or such as adding special effects, such as blending different streams, such as using computer-generated imagery for enriching the streams. So somehow in the IT industry, and if you go to industries such as the content industry, of these technologies are currently underused. So that the content industry is using, for example, media blending or computer-generated imagery in a natural way. And our idea when we created Curento is, why can't we incorporate this type of technologies for creating a real-time communications media server, a WebRTC media server? So this is the main part of our vision, to somehow extend what current state-of-the-art media servers provide for enabling them to do more than transport, doing things beyond transport. And you may think, and why this is important, why this is relevant. We believe this is relevant because somehow transporting media, or let's say making possible to media streams to be moved from one part to another, is something very important for use case related to making calls. Basically, to make people to communicate among each other as if the communication was face-to-face, okay? This is somehow the business of telecommunication operators, okay? And WebRTC, of course, can be used for this. And somehow, there are a lot of interest in this part of the problem, and most software initiatives in the WebRTC arena are devoted to this. Nevertheless, WebRTC can also be used in other contexts, which are somehow which have less attention from the public right now. One of them, for example, is for content distribution and entertainment. Whenever you want to make content distribution and entertainment, just transporting media is not really what people is expecting, what users are expecting. Users in relation to content are expecting that this media can be enriched. You might need to add different types of additional media on top of the content, such as subtitles, such as watermarks. You might think in relation also to the content industry that the media can be interactive itself, so that what is happening in your media stream can evolve depending on what the user does. So all these types of advanced use cases, which may be useful for content distribution, for entertainment, and even for e-learning, are somehow a blue ocean right now, because there are not really huge efforts from developers for creating enablers over there. And the same thing happens when dealing with the problem of media communications among machines or in person-to-machine models. Okay. In that case, WebRTC also has a lot of possibilities for use cases in dealing with the transformation of cameras into advanced sensors, which provides typical capabilities such as transcoding, MCUs, selective forwarding units, recording. All that things are provided. But the difference between Curento and other media servers is that in Curento, every of these capabilities is inside a module, a black box that we call a media element. So at the end of the day, Curento Media Server is a collection of those capabilities, a collection of media elements. So we have media elements capable, for example, of recording a stream, or there are media elements capable of playing a stream from a file, or there are media elements which act as a MCU, as a mixer. There are media elements which act as a selective forwarded unit, as a media router. There are media elements which provide a specific computer vision capability, for example, detecting faces or detecting movement. So the media server at the end of the day is just a collection of these capabilities. And basically, the developer who wants to create applications for our media server, for the Curento media server, the developer just needs to connect these capabilities following the topology that that the developer wants. So for example, if I want to somehow create an application receiving a WebRTC stream, applying a filter for detecting a face and replacing the face with whatever, with a Darth Vader helmet, for example, and transcoding the stream to RTP, I just need to create an application like the one you can see in this slide. Basically, I just take the modules, the different modules I want, the modules for send-receive of WebRTC streams, the modules for RTP H.264 communications, the modules for making the face detection and face replacement. And in the case of this specific application, there is also a recorder. So myself as a developer, when I create an application, I just need to instantiate these objects, these modules, which are called media elements in our jargon, and to connect them for, let's say, with arrows, okay? With arrows that at the end of the day are invocations to primitives in our API. And basically, the media stream is just following the topology I have decided as a developer. So the media stream is getting through the different media elements and is being processed following the specific capabilities of every media element. So to this chain of media elements, to this graph of media elements, because at the end of the day, this is a graph, we provide to this graph the name of media pipeline. In reality, it is not a media pipeline because it is an arbitrary graph. It doesn't need to be a linear pipeline. But for some historical reasons, we call it a media pipeline. So for understanding what is Curento and what applications can be created through Curento, it is important to understand these concepts, that the media server is basically a toolbox of capabilities, and that I can connect these capabilities for creating a media pipeline which determines the stream processing of my specific application. Okay. So creating applications is somehow like we say that it is like playing with a Lego game, because I just need to go to the toolbox and I just need, as a developer, to instantiate and to connect the different models in the way I want. So for illustrating this, if you want, we can somehow take a look to an application, to a specific application created on top of Curento. So I'm going to introduce now some, let's say, technical jargon from developers. And if you are a developer, you will appreciate the following slides. Otherwise, you will probably get a little bit lost. But don't worry, because we will come back to conceptual information again in a few slides. So basically, when you want to create an application with Curento, you need to understand that the media server is somehow a process executing into a machine, which is reachable through a protocol. We call this protocol the Curento protocol, and it is based on JSON RPC over WebSockets. So it is kind of simple protocol written on top of JSON. And basically, on top of that protocol, we have created grappers. We have created client libraries that are capable of communicating directly with the media server without the developer needing to program the protocol by itself, let's say. So we currently have client libraries for JavaScript and for Java, which makes possible to create applications with different architectures. So the most simple architecture is to use our JavaScript API from a browser, and directly the browser can speak with the media server. So that from a browser, from a JavaScript application executing into a browser, I can directly ask the media server to create an application. And basically, if you remember, creating an application is instantiating media elements and connecting them. So from the JavaScript code, I can just go to the media server and say, okay, I want to receive the media in this way, process the media in this way, and do whatever I want with the media. And all this is JavaScript code. Basically, the media server is modular, and that the media server is a collection, a toolbox of capabilities, and that when I create an application, I just connect these models following the topology I want. And we call this topology a pipeline, a media pipeline, okay? So I was explaining then how to develop applications, and we somehow were introducing different architectures, meaning that the media server can somehow work with a two-tier architecture, speaking directly with the browser, or can work with a typical web architecture, three-tiered web architecture, where there is an application server mediated. And then here we have somehow a tutorial on how to develop applications using our media server. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but I just want to share with you some information. This is somehow what you need to do for start working with Curento, the installation, the knowledge page you need to have. But I need somehow to stop in this slide for a minute, for showing you basically what is the Hello World application for Curento. The Hello World application for Curento is basically the most simple application we can create using the Curento media server. And this most simple application is basically a loopback. A loopback meaning that it is an application where a browser is getting a media stream from the webcam. It is sending the media stream to the Curento Media Server, which is somehow the infrastructure. And the media server is giving back the media to the browser. So basically, the browser gets back whatever it is sending without any processing. So this application is not very interesting, let's say. It is not making anything useful, but it makes possible to understand somehow the main concepts related to developing applications with Curento. Because in this case, the pipeline I need to create comprises just one media element. This media element is just the one with the capability, with the ability of sending and receiving WebRTC streams. And this media element, which is called the WebRTC endpoint, is capable of negotiating SDPs, is capable of receiving the media stream, and is capable of providing the stream through its source. And given that I want to create a loopback, my application just needs to connect the source to the sink of the WebRTC endpoint. And in this case, whatever it is received from the network, it is going to be fed back to the network. So this is why we say that this application is a loopback. So in case I execute this application, you have here a tutorial explaining the application, the source code, and a video in YouTube showing the application. Basically, what I'm going to see is the own image that is generated by the browser. So this is not much interesting. Here you have somehow the architecture of this specific application. This is not much interesting, as I was telling you, but from that application, we can create richer applications, applications making more interesting things. For example, we can think about extending that application to, in addition to making the loopback, record the stream into a file, for example. Then, in that case, the pipeline is just a WebRTC endpoint with the loopback. And I just need to, given that I want to record, I just need to instantiate the media element which is capable of recording, which is called the recorder endpoint, and I just need to connect it to our source. So our API makes possible to do this. And after that, I can, once the file has been recorded, after that, I can play the file using a player endpoint. So I instantiate a player endpoint, and I tell the player endpoint where the file can be located, and I just say play to it. And when I say play to it, it is going to be sending the media to the element I want, because in my applications, I will be somehow instantiating that element, which is, again, a WebRTC endpoint. So in this case, I will have an application capable of recording WebRTC streams in a server and playing those WebRTC streams in a server. And here you have the source code of such application and a video showing somehow the application working. Okay. Then we can take a look to more interesting applications. For example, applications making WebRTC media distribution. For making WebRTC media distribution, basically I need this application. If you don't understand what I mean by media distribution, I mean to have one presenter and a lot of viewers, an application somehow for making a broadcasting of a WebRTC stream. So basically I need one WebRTC endpoint connected to the presenter, to the user which is providing the master stream, and I just need to instantiate one WebRTC endpoint for every viewer, and my application just needs to be establishing the appropriate connections so that every time a new viewer is added to the application, I instantiate one WebRTC endpoint for that viewer, and I connect that WebRTC endpoint to the master WebRTC endpoint. So in this case, I create a one-to-many, a broadcasting, let's say, application. Okay. Again, here you have the source code for this, both in Java and in Node.js. And just for showing you some additional examples, there are a lot of examples. If you go to the Curento software repository in GitHub, you will see that there are a lot of examples. But here, we can extend the loopback Hello World application we presented before to put something in the middle of the loopback. For example, to put a face overlay filter, which is a special media element capable of detecting faces and putting an image on top of the face. So with this type of pipeline, I can somehow create applications where I send a media stream and the media server is detecting any face in the media stream and replacing the face with whatever image I want. So in this way, we could enumerate a lot of different applications that can be created. For example, we have also a marker augmented reality media element. I don't know if you know about marker augmented reality, but basically this type of media element is capable of replacing a marker, a special type of image, by whatever you want, by the image you want. So I think that we can take a look to this one into YouTube. I imagine that you are seeing my screen. So as you can see in this example, basically we have a loopback, and in the loopback, the marker is being replaced. We can see it again. The marker is being replaced by an image. So for creating this application, I just need a media pipeline with a WebRTC endpoint connected to the marker augmented reality media element, and I can select the image I want to put into the marker for replacing the marker, let's say. Okay, so you have all these examples. You can take a look to our YouTube channel to see them working. Okay, another example is, for example, motion detection, so that we have a media element for detecting movement, and when that media element detects movement, we can activate things such as detecting a face which is seen in the screen. Or we have another media element for detecting crowds, so that this is useful for smart cities. Whenever there is a problem in a large city, in a street in a large city, a very fast crowd of people goes to look around what's happening. So we have a filter for detecting that type of crowds. Okay. So there are many other examples, and again, I insist in that you can take a look to them into our YouTube and into our GitHub repo. But given that time is running fast, I would like to introduce you some concepts related to our developments in the area of cloud infrastructures, which are somehow relevant for scaling the media server. These evolutions are taking place in the context of a project called Nuvo Media. If you remember at the beginning of my presentation, I talked a little bit about Nuvo Media. So that Nuvo Media is an attempt of making a cloudification of Curento, so that the Curento media server is transformed into an elastic media server working in a cloud instead of being a monolithic media server working just in a computer. Okay. And then when making this cloudification, basically we needed to select if we were going to go to an infrastructure as a service model, to a software as a service model, or to a platform as a service model. And in the case of a WebRTC media server like Curento, the choice is simple, because somehow WebRTC is providing an API, so WebRTC is everything about APIs, and in that case, we decided to go to a platform as a service model instead of an infrastructure as a service or a software as a service model. So when creating platform as a service APIs for WebRTC, there are a number of issues that need to be solved, and this is, of course, quite a complex issue. And today, I would like to invest some minutes explaining you a little bit about the scalability, about the specific problem of scalability. Again, I insist in that there are many other problems, such as security, dependability, and a lot of things. But somehow, the most interesting one is the one of scalability. And for understanding what we are doing in this new media project, I need somehow to introduce the concept of session, of multimedia session, let's say, okay? So if you go to RFC 5117, basically they define a multimedia session such as an association of participants, of users that are engaged into a communication. So if we have a peer-to-peer call, the multimedia session is comprising just two users. If we have a group call, a room, let's say, a room like the ones provided by applications such as Hangouts or Jitsi or equivalent, in that case, the multimedia session comprises all the participants on the room. Okay. So basically, the session somehow comprises a number of participants which are exchanging related media, which in some cases it is a number of streams that are shared in the session, or even a single stream that is shared in the session. So if we take into consideration this definition of multimedia session, we can now think about what scaling a multimedia application means, a multimedia real-time communication application means. And basically there are two dimensions of scalability that need to be taken into account. One dimension of scalability is scaling on the number of sessions. Okay, so that, for example, if I'm thinking about a room communication application, Hangouts or Skype or whatever, scaling in that case means to have the ability of providing a very large number of rooms, a very large number of sessions. Okay, so this is one dimension of scalability. But there is another dimension, which is the size of the session itself. So if the size of the session don't scale, I can create sessions of a limited number of participants, let's say 10 or 15 or 20. Different technologies provide different limits, but if there are no scalability in the number of users per session, that number will be bounded somehow. Okay. So most efforts taking place right now in cloud scalability are taking place in the scaling on the number of sessions. Okay, so if you go to technologies such as Hangouts, Dropbox, Skype, or even the evolutions that are taking place using Jitsi by different providers, are concentrated on scaling on the number of sessions, but not on the size of the session. So this means that the type of scalability that you can achieve is somehow like the one shown in this picture. Again, in the sense that you will have a very large number of sessions, but small sessions. So somehow, in this Nuvo Media project, in this Nuvo Media software, we started implementing this notion of scalability. And for this, we created an architecture based on a number of cloud functions. Somehow this is the architecture, but I don't want to spend much time with this. Basically, for the infrastructure as a service layer, we used OpenStack, and this takes care of scaling the number of computing resources. On top of this, there is something that is called in the jargon the cloud orchestrator, which is basically managing things such as the auto-scaling through rules which somehow use monitoring metrics for taking decisions in relation to the number of instances that need to be up and running at a given time. And this type of cloud orchestrators, if you are familiar with cloud technologies, are basically what technologies such as such as CloudFormation in Amazon are providing, or in OpenStack, it is provided by technologies such as Heat. The Heat templates provide this capability. And basically, on top of this, we have the typical architecture for a web application comprising three layers: the client, the application server, and the media server. And somehow, for complementing this, there is also a load balancer and a broker. But going direct to the point, basically the media server function is what is provided by the Curento media server. So different instances of the Curento media server are instantiated into that cloud infrastructures and provide all the capabilities of Curento: transcoding, computer vision, group communication, whatever you want to access inside Curento. Okay? So at the end of the day, what this type of technologies are deploying are something like this. It is an application server instance which dialogues with a broker function, and that broker function is in charge of balancing load among different media servers so that the different media servers can hold sessions. But these sessions cannot communicate among each other. Somehow they live into a specific media server. Okay. So again, this is the typical architecture that most people are providing, and Nuvo Media is also providing this, of course. The application server is also typical in this case, okay? And there is a load balancer function, which is also typical. No science over here. So this is the summary of how Nuvo Media is facing that scalability dimension, the dimension on the number of sessions. But most interesting, and this is somehow a research topic, we are working also in scaling the size of the session, okay? And for this, let's come to this slide, because this slide shows somehow a different use case to the one of a standard group communication based on rooms. Okay. So one of the questions people typically ask me when I explain what we are doing in Nuvo Media is why in the hell somebody wants to create very large sessions? It makes no sense to have a room with 100 participants. Nobody will be able to communicate anything useful if there are 100 people speaking at the same time. So it makes no sense to make rooms of 100 people. And indeed, this is the case. But the point is that human communication models are not always room models. Room models are useful for use cases such as making meetings or making somehow putting into communication to small groups. But there are a lot of additional use cases where people don't communicate, let's say, in small groups. If we think about, for example, e-learning sessions, it is not the case in general that in an e-learning session there are 100 people speaking to each other, but it can happen that there are two people speaking and 100 viewers, so that these 100 viewers are learning from the discussion of two people, okay, which can be two professors or a professor and a student. And the number of viewers in this case can be 100 in a typical case, but can be much bigger. Nothing avoids to have a lesson about some interesting topic and have, instead of having one viewers, having 1,000 viewers or 10,000 viewers or even 1 million viewers. So the point is that there are use cases that are somehow beyond the typical room model and which are useful for a scenario such as e-learning or a scenario such as entertainment, because I can have, for example, my favorite singer speaking with a journalist, or I can have two politicians speaking, and that conversation between two or three people is being broadcasted to a very large audience. Okay? And that broadcasting can right now happen using CDN technologies, but CDN technologies have a problem, which is latency. In CDN technologies, the broadcasting latency is big. In general, it is in the order of magnitude of the several seconds or even the minutes. So that makes it impossible for people in the viewers, let's say, to communicate or to participate into the conversation with the people who are in the master group, in the group which is being broadcasted. Okay? So WebRTC technologies provide an evolution on this type of use cases because latency is very, very low, and this makes possible to move dynamically users from viewers to become presenters, let's say, okay? So that they can participate in the conversation at any time. And this type of use case is quite interesting for e-learning scenarios because, of course, I can have a teacher explaining whatever, and I can have students interrupting him just in time for asking questions. With current state-of-the-art CDNs, this is not possible because the student is seeing what the teacher is speaking with several seconds of latency. Several seconds means even 1 minute or a couple of minutes. Okay? So we are working in implementing this use case, which basically means that instead of having the data scalability model of a lot of sessions, but small sessions, the scalability model in this case is having a few sessions, but very large sessions. Very large sessions that follow a one-to-many model, let's say. Instead of following a model in which everybody can communicate with everybody, like the room models, we believe that for this type of scalability, it is much more interesting to somehow make the size of the session to grow following a one-to-many model, because we believe that this type of use cases where there are a small number of people speaking and a very large number of viewers is somehow what users are asking for in this type of a scenario, let's say. Okay. So for this, we are basically evolving some pieces of our architecture, and in particular the media server and the broker function, to be able to somehow, instead of having different media servers to hold sessions, independent sessions, what we want to create are trees of media servers that are capable of somehow communicating among each other for creating very large distribution trees of media. This seems a simple problem, but it is not a simple problem. It is not a simple problem because of the way in which real-time communications protocol work, and because in the way the viewers send the feedback to the infrastructure. So here there are really a lot of very complex problems related to adjusting quality to the different viewers, to considering in one way or another the feedback from the viewers, to managing users which have very bad network conditions. And here there are a lot of technologies which are under development right now, such as scalable video coding, which are somehow useful for implementing the use case. But somehow also we are working on it using directly whatever the technology is providing right now, okay? which requires somehow to introduce transcoding barriers in the tree. Okay? So somehow at the end of the day, the basic building block for this is to chain different media servers, but introducing, as I said before, additional features related to adjusting the quality to the needs of the different viewers, and And somehow this is still work in progress, let's say, okay? So with this, somehow I conclude with the information I wanted to present to you. I think I'm more or less in time, yes. And I don't know if you want to open a discussion for questions or...
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation.
Okay, thank you.
And let's see if there are questions, I don't know, from here or from remotely. Questions? I have one question. You mentioned what was very interesting, that you can scale from a broadcast viewer to involve in two-way video conference participant somehow, and scale from the traditional MCU multipoint model to the selective foreign unit, and this is why I think it is very exciting, Currento media engine and your project. The question is, you mentioned that you want to send media to large endpoint numbers, and do you plan to use multicast or any such kind of technologies to broadcast video stream, or you think only the unicast streaming should work between the endpoints?
Yeah. This is indeed a very interesting question, because somehow introducing multicast could be a solution to many of the technical problems that emerge when implementing that type of use case of having very large broadcasting trees. But somehow the problem with using multicast is that it is not currently supported by WebRTC, and there is not a clear roadmap for introducing multicast support in WebRTC. And in my opinion, this is something that sooner or later it will be taken into consideration by the IETF and by the W3C WebRTC and RTC web working groups. But I'm afraid that this is not going to happen in the next couple of years, because there are still a very large number of issues that need to be solved before for the common use case of making just calls, let's say. So for providing a short answer to your question, the answer is that this is indeed very interesting. This could be a solution, but it is not possible in current state-of-the-art technologies, at least if you don't want to use a proprietary viewer, which is somehow something that we are trying to avoid, given that WebRTC is becoming the universal client for real-time multimedia communication, because it is available at any browser. We want somehow to leverage that, and to somehow our strategy is to maintain full compatibility with WebRTC in the status in which it is at the moment. So the answer to your question is that this is not possible right now. And given that this is not possible right now, we need to somehow make that broadcasting trees using unicast. So if you want to provide media to 100,000 users, you need to maintain 100,000 streams, which is costly, but there is no other way of doing this. And somehow this is also the strategy used by CDNs using non-real-time communication protocols such as MPEG-DASH or HLS. At the end of the day, they maintain separated sessions, separated unicast distribution sessions for every client. Okay?
Okay, thank you very much, and give the applause to him. Thank you very much for your very interesting presentation, and sorry for the technical issues.